ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
On these summer days, one of the great escapes for many of us is going to the garden. Here in Wisconsin, it seems like our reward for enduring months of cold, snow, and slush. But while we may be drawn to the colorful flowers, some people are more interested in those small winged visitors to the flowers, the bees. Our guest on this edition of UWM Today is one of those people. Jeff Caron has spent his career studying bees because of the critical role that they play in plant reproduction. Jeff is a professor of biological sciences at UWM, and he's spent the past 30 years meticulously documenting the behavior of bees. And what he has learned may surprise you. Welcome, Jeff. It's good to have you on today's program.
Great to be here, Tom.
Jeff, let's begin with a quick biology lesson for our listeners. Plants need some help in order to reproduce, don't they?
That's right, Tom. So most flowering plants depend on animal pollinators for successful reproduction. When bees or butterflies or hummingbirds and moths forage for nectar and pollen in the flowers, they're unintentionally picking up pollen. And then when they visit additional plants, some of that pollen on their bodies is brushed off onto flowers of those new plants, promoting cross-fertilization.
Do the bees have any idea that they're performing this critical task for us?
So it's interesting. So actually, the interests of the bees and the plants aren't really completely aligned. So although it's a mutualism, although both parties benefit to the animals is that they're sort of trying to forage for as much food as they can without being preyed upon. And so think of the animals, the pollinators, as being like trick-or-treaters going to nearest houses, trying to get as much candy reward during a brief trick-or-treating window in Halloween. But by contrast, from the plant's point of view, the plants actually want to disperse their pollen farther. Why? Because if some of their pollen moves to flowers on the same plant, then you'll have inbred seeds. And even if it's dispersed or if it's moved to adjacent plants, the quality of the seeds will be lower. And so there's actually a divergence of the benefit. So the pollinators aren't doing it for the plant. They're doing it because they're hungry and trying to obtain food. They're trying to get nutrition, pollen, and nectar.
But it's really important that they be doing this and moving from plant to plant because it does allow for greater variety, right, as these plants reproduce.
That's right. It helps to maintain levels of genetic diversity, and it has very important consequences for the quality of the seeds that a plant makes. And there's some plants which, if there is a sudden decline in pollinator abundance, those plants would not make any seeds at all. They would stop reproducing.
Now, we have heard over the last couple of years some real horror stories about the threats that bees face in society today because of the use of pesticides and the cutting down of a lot of the wild natural habitat where they're located. As a biologist, I'm sure you're very concerned about what's happening to the bee population.
That's right. So you know, here in the United States, we have some 3,500 species of bees. Perhaps the most important are in terms of the role as an ecosystem service in pollination are the bumblebees. We have 46 species of bumblebees in North America, about 20 in Wisconsin. And especially for bumblebees, we have seen declines for many, not all, but for many of the species just in the years that I've been working. We've actually kept very detailed records of bumblebee abundance at our field site back for 20 years now. And We have seen a pretty dramatic decline. Probably the number one cause of pollinator decline in the U.S. right now is habitat destruction. So as we convert, as we have suburban sprawl and as agriculture becomes more intensified, there's a diminishment of natural habitats. And that means less wildflowers to provide food for the pollinators. Pesticides are another major problem, as you identified. They're used widely on farms and in cities, and they can be lethal to the pollinators. And a third cause is disease. There are a lot of problems with disease and parasites that have contributed to pollinator decline. One that's got a lot of attention, the rusty patch bumblebee, is a species that's now just recently been listed as an endangered species. We do have populations still here in Wisconsin, but its abundance is probably just 1% of what it was 20 years ago.
There's a real risk or threat to human well-being if bees disappear, isn't there?
That's right. So it takes several forms. So one is that bees play an important role in agriculture. Although a lot of focus has been on the introduced European honeybee, which is not native to North America, it turns out that our native bees, for example, bumblebees, play a critical role in agriculture. And they are probably the single most important pollinator for many of our crops. And sites that have both honeybees and bumblebees have much better pollination. But they're also, they play a critical role for the functioning of entire ecosystems because our native plants are pollinated by these pollinators. And about 50% of flowering plants would produce no seeds without visits by pollinators.
Jeff, I mentioned at the beginning of the program, humorously, that the garden is our reward for getting through winter. But the truth is that people love to garden. And certainly during this period of COVID quarantines or social distancing, I've never seen more of my neighbors out tending their gardens than they are today. Are there things that we homeowners, people, or if you've got an apartment and you love to the outdoors, are there certain plants or flowers that we should be putting in our garden that would help create a better, more inviting environment for bees?
So, Tom, that's a great question. So, obviously, just planting more wildflowers can help support the bee populations. But interestingly, if you think about when the bees emerge in spring, so bumblebee queens emerge typically in late April, early May. And when they emerge, it's cold out and they need food right away because it's just small numbers of individuals that are looking for nest sites. Once they find a nest site, they need to lay eggs and provision their young. And so to do that, they need food available. And so often we will have failures of new populations because the queens die because there isn't food available. So one of the things that people can do is to plant late spring blooming plants. It's actually more critical. A lot of people focus on flowers in the summertime, but actually flowers in late spring. And one of the best ones you can plant in your garden is lupin. So lupin are preferred, really loved food by bumblebees, for example, and they typically flower end of May and into June. And they can really help support populations. And we, in fact, we did a major prairie restoration, 6-hectare prairie restoration at the UWM Field Station to really support all of the 6 different bumblebee species that occur at my study sites. And so one of the things that we did is we ensured that we planted lupin early in the year, but then we ensured that we had continuous bloom of different species throughout all of the flowering period from, April all the way into September.
Boy, that is great advice. I'm going to remember that. It's lupin. How do you spell that? It's
L-U-P-I-N-E.
Okay.
The scientific name is lupinus.
Okay.
And it's a native species to here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, I'm going to make sure that we get some of that in our garden for next year. I do have Great. To mention my wife and I are big walkers. We walk all around the village, and this time, for the first time in years, we saw many people who did not mow their lawn early in the season, and they had signs up that said "No Mow May." Is that because of the desire to create an environment more welcoming to insects like bees?
Well, so, you know, there's increasing interest in, instead of having what we call a monoculture of just, you know, grass that doesn't support pollinators, instead having natural diversity, more like a prairie. And so people are, more and more people are planting prairies, or if not planting prairies, planting select plants, extending out their gardens throughout their property. We've actually set up some prairies on the UWM campus, but we have even larger prairies at the UWM field station. And so it's amazing as you increase the abundance of wildflowers that you really will see within a year or two dramatic increases in pollinator populations.
That is really, really neat. I have to ask, as I was getting ready for today's program, it occurred to me that bees is the focus of your work. And certainly many of us have heard about the role that bees play and critical role they play in pollination. But what about other insects? Are there other critters out there that are getting involved in pollination? And then what about birds? Do they play any role?
So Tom, in fact, it's not just insects, right? So let me just give you examples of some of the diverse classes of pollinators. So immediately people will think of the tremendous diversity of bees, and they'll think of flies, and they'll think of moths, and they'll think of butterflies. But when we're talking birds, while we focus here in North America on hummingbirds, birds, which are actually perching birds, in other words, rather than hovering like hummingbirds, they actually land on the plant, they're the most important pollinator in Western Australia, where more than a third of all flowering plants are pollinated by birds. And same thing is true in Southern Africa. But it's not just birds. So it turns out in Western Australia, you have, and also especially in Southern Africa, you have small mammals that can be effective pollinators. Actually, do you know that gerbils can be effective pollinators? And honey possums, another tiny small mammal that's a marsupial in Western Australia, they're pollinators. Now, here's one that will really blow your mind, Tom. So do you know that there are lizards that are pollinators? So there are only about 23 documented cases of this, and all but two occur on remote islands in the middle of the ocean. We think this is areas where there was a lack of the more typical pollinators, things like bees. And so we see them on these isolated islands where somehow lizards somehow dispersed to these islands, and they play an important role in pollination. And you'll actually see pollen on the face of the lizard, just as you would see pollen. So in another class, we were talking a little bit about small mammals, another important pollinator in Central America and also in North America, that's a mammal or bats. So bats play an important role in pollination as well. So quite a diversity of pollination. Yeah.
See if you could help me feel better about all the gophers in my backyard. Do they play a role at all? Because they come out in force.
They don't play a role in pollination. But how about this, Tom? So do you know that there are monkeys that pollinate? So
no.
There are small monkeys. So there are small monkeys that insert their faces into flowers that are actually shaped like, you know, you could put your face into the flower, and they typically have bright orange color. And you might wonder why. Well, it turns out that often there's an association between flower color and what the pollinators can best visualize. And so, you know, orange, as you know, in humans, right, is a color that we can readily see. So that if you were a worker on a highway, you'd want to be wearing bright color like orange because you would stand out and be highly visible even late at night. And so these plants have evolved orange coloration as a way of attracting primate pollinators. So yeah, tremendous diversity of pollinators.
Wow, just fascinating. You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in our remote locations, we're out of the WUWM studio offices because of the COVID situation, but Jeff Caron, professor of biological sciences at UWM's College of Health of Letters and Science, is our guest. Jeff, we're talking about the important work that you're doing, studying pollination. And let's take just a couple of moments here to talk about how you go through such a rigorous process of tracking pollination. Because, well, I've so enjoyed the first part of our conversation talking about what's happening in our backyard. You and your colleagues at UWM have an extraordinarily rigorous and systematic way of finding out what kind of pollination takes place and what type of insects or other living things are involved. Talk about the work that you're doing at the research station.
Sure. So first I should say that this work is supported by the National Science Foundation, and we're studying how changes in pollinator abundance and in the composition of species, of pollinator species, influence plant reproduction. And not only can we quantify how visits by different wild bees influence the number of seeds a plant makes, we can also use various genetic approaches to explore how those visits influence seed quality. And so what my team does is we actually can track the movements of individual bees. And so to do this, we have experimental populations of plants where we can, with a large team of often up to 8 undergraduates, as well as some graduate students, we can actually map the precise foraging patterns of every single bee to every single flower in that population. And then, because the plant that we work on, it's called monkey flower, it's a wetland plant with large blue-purple flowers, the flowers only last each day for a single morning. And so because of that, we can know the complete visitation history of that flower. And then when the seeds ripen, we can use molecular genetic analyses to determine who the father was of each of those seeds. So using the same technologies that were developed, for example, to identify in a paternity lawsuit who the father was, if there was some question as to who of maybe two fathers was the father. Well, in our populations, we have dozens of plants. And so it takes a lot of genetic markers, but we can precisely map every single movement of every single gene in the population. And so Tom, our work actually weds together ecological studies and behavioral studies with detailed laboratory analyses. And I love that whole combination of the work, all the way from carrying out the observation all the way to the genetic analyses.
Jeff, you mentioned the role that the students play. Let's talk about that a little bit, because I think it may surprise a lot of listeners that that even undergraduate students could get involved in this amazingly precise and important research.
That's right. So, Tom, each year, just for my particular research project, we have about 8 undergrads who are typically students who have also been enrolled in my classes and other classes in the Department of Biological Sciences who get involved in research projects. And they're just naturally curious observers, and they love being outside. We're doing this on, beautiful days in the summertime, and they love being able to study the intricate behavior of the pollinators. And it's great scientific training. Many of them have gone on to graduate study or to jobs in conservation with state and federal agencies and some private botanic gardens.
What about corporate America? Are they interested in this research? The big companies that produce the seeds that farmers use, for example, for their plants?
So less so for my own work, but what I will say is there's increasing interest in agriculture to leave enough land fallow with wildflowers instead of tilling it all, to leave maybe 10% of it in native vegetation, because that's what it takes to support the native bumblebee populations. There was some beautiful work that's been done out of Rutgers University where the scientists compared fields where 100% had been plowed and where only 90% had been plowed and 10% were left in wildflowers. What they found was the bumblebee populations were much more abundant and you got much higher seed production and fruit production. So although my specific research doesn't really have corporate implications, research in pollination biology has really highlighted the importance of practices that can help to really benefit agriculture.
But that's really important news for those of our listeners who do live out in the country. We, WUWM, thanks to the internet, is picked up everywhere in the world these days. And we know we have listeners all around. What advice would you give farmers who are tuned in today and are interested in making sure that bee population stays healthy, to set aside a portion of their field?
Well, so historically, farms were small, and farms were small, and there were areas that maybe didn't lend themselves to tilling. Maybe that is a small wet area near a farmhouse that was just left untilled. But what's happened, and this is especially a problem in California, where you get these mega farms where everything is tilled and everything is drained, and there are such large areas that it's actually too far for the pollinators to fly to the crops. And so what that has done is it's forced us to depend on honeybees, the introduced European honeybee, and to bring in hives to support those populations. But honeybees are actually very inefficient pollinators. So you need more and more honeybees when the job could be actually done more efficiently in many cases, by our native bees. And so increasingly, there has been interest in trying to leave enough land untilled throughout a farm and just leave it as in its sort of more natural prairie state in order to support native pollinators.
Fascinating. Well, you talked about the field station a couple of times. Let's share a little more information with our listeners about where it's located and the important role that it plays in your research and the research being done by other scientists at UWM.
So, Tom, the field station is located at the Cedarburg Bog, which is near Saukville, Wisconsin. It's about a 45-minute drive just northwest of the UWM main campus in Milwaukee. And it has really outstanding facilities for faculty and student research in ecology and evolution and animal behavior. And so our campus abuts a state natural area, the Cedarburg Bog. And so together, the field station manages more than 2,500 acres of high quality natural communities, including one of the largest and most pristine wetlands in all of southeastern Wisconsin. So we really have an ideal experimental setting for our work.
And you do offer tours from time to time, correct?
That's right. We don't currently have them now, but we do have them in most summers and may have some a little bit later in the season if social distancing permits.
I understand that as this program airs, that there's a special time going on across the country that pays tribute to the important role that bees play in pollination. What is it?
That's right. So we're fortunate that this program is actually airing during National Pollinator Week. So National Pollinator Week was set up by U.S. Congress 13 years ago and designated as a time to celebrate pollinators and to highlight the importance of reducing the decline of pollinator populations.
And so the idea is to get farmers or gardeners, everybody to think more deliberately about the way in which they can help support those bee populations and create better environments that will promote pollination.
That's exactly right, Tom.
Jeff, we talked about the field station, and I know that there's one other really important facility at UWM that you wanted to mention where there are also a lot of other plants that grow year-round.
That's right. So, Tom, UWM is fortunate to have a state-of-the-art greenhouse, and it's right on our campus, and it's visited annually by more than 1,200 UWM students. So the greenhouse provides an opportunity for students to learn about biological diversity throughout the year. We have some 700 plant species from 100 different flowering plant families. They're flowering throughout the year, and it's just an amazing resource. It's also a great place to visit in the dead of winter.
Yeah.
Because there, it's always sunny.
I've actually had the benefit of being up there. We've had a couple of alumni events where we got in behind the scenes. And boy, what a sweet treat in the middle of winter to feel heat and humidity.
That's right.
And green things growing.
Absolutely. Jeff, I love going there.
Yeah, it's great. Jeff, just a couple of minutes left. And I always love to ask our scientists this question. Where do you see your research going? You've been working in this field of pollination study for three decades. What's next?
So we're especially interested in understanding why it is that adjacent plants, neighboring plants, can differ markedly in their reproductive patterns. So most researchers assume that reproductive strategies are characteristic of a whole plant species, or maybe of different populations. But we're finding that there can be a lot of variation among individuals. And so what we're doing is we're trying to tease apart, are these differences due to genetic factors like flower shape, or are they a result of chance ecological circumstances, such as where the plant is spatially in the population? And so we're using really intricate experimental design to tease those factors apart.
Jeff, thank you so much. Just a fascinating conversation. We wish you the very best, both at the field station and back here on the main campus, working with your students as you continue your important work.
Thanks, Tom. It's been great to chat with you.
Jeff Caron, Professor of Biological Sciences at UWM's College of Letters and Science, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. Well, that's all for this week's program. Remember, it's National Pollinators Week, so if you see a bee out there, don't swat it. Let it do its thing. And in the meantime, have a great week. We'll see you next week at the same time right here. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.